Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, guys. This is a very groggy Jim Smallman, the morning before I go to Orlando with another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Pieces Network. You can probably hear baby Claudio freaking out in the background. He's quite excited. Daddy's home for the first time in a few days and then sadly depart for over a week and leave my wife and beautiful son at home to go out to Orlando for WrestleMania. But that's something I'll chat about in a bit. Hope you're well. Thanks as always for downloading the podcast. Keep supporting this podcast. JimSmallman.com/TNJ is where you point people. If you want to get new people to subscribe to it, there's the various ways you can subscribe there and a list of all the episodes and stuff like that. And obviously, do keep subscribing to us and rating us and reviewing us wherever you get podcasts from, because that's super. It's super helpful for what we do. Now, today's episode, I did the WrestleMania list and the progress list last week, and today's episode I think is possibly the most important Tuesday Night Jaw Meets episode that I've done, as I chatted to Pastor William Eva. Now, I'm not going to kind of give away what we talk about, but I've known Pastor for a long time, since he came to the Progress Training School in, I think, 2013, and I like him very much. I like him incredibly, loads as a person. I think he's a fantastic chap and he's super nice. And I already liked him until I found out something about his past. And that didn't change anything for me, because I only have, how I think about things, I only ever see the nice dude who's in front of me, who's never done anything wrong to me. Now, I think Pastor's story, and you'll learn it when you listen to the podcast, and we start off with an unusual sort of fluff, but when you get to the meat of the story, I think you'll hopefully be like I am and be really inspired by someone's tale of dedication and rehabilitation, because I genuinely think he's an inspiring dude, and I've wanted to do this podcast with him for a while, and he's been a little bit reticent about talking about certain things in it, because, you know, it's stuff that he regrets and stuff that he's sorry for, and I think it's a tremendously important thing to listen to and think about how we consider rehabilitation in society and things like that. And I'm delighted that Pastor sat down with me and chose to speak to me about it and chose to make this stuff public, because it's a big, brave step. And again, you'll understand more when you listen to the podcast itself. So huge thanks to Pastor William Eva for doing this. We mentioned that he's running the London Marathon for a cause that's very close to him, called Wrapped, which he talks about and will tell you all about during the podcast. Go and sponsor him. Even if it's only a quid, even if it's, you know, a fiver, which is, you know, I know not everyone's got a fiver knocking about, right? I don't want you to... If you're inspired by his story, chuck him some money for doing the marathon. He's got a target, and I hope he hits the target. I hope he smashes the target. Doing a marathon's hard. I trained to do it last year and I got injured halfway through and I was struggling. Like, Pastor wrestles. He's got a day job, often a night job as it turns out, and he's training to do a marathon for a cause that is really important to him. It's not some arbitrary charity. He's gone, fine, I'll do that, I'll get my charity place. No, he is super, super into this charity for reasons that will become apparent when you listen to the podcast. So, sponsor him, okay? go to justgiving.co.uk/runpastarun, and it's pasta how he spells his name, not the type of food. Okay, so forgive me, quite tired, didn't get home until 4 a.m. justgiving.co.uk/runpastarun. And I mentioned this in the podcast, but Pastor is, of course, a former Progress Wrestling champion. You can see the moment when he won the title at demand-progress.com. And the moment when he won the title meant, I know it meant the world to him because of his past. And myself and John and Glenn, because we were aware of his past, but it wasn't public, it really was a big deal to us knowing what he'd overcome to get to that stage. So I think if you go back and see the moment he wins the title again with the fresh knowledge that you'll learn from listening to this podcast, it makes that moment even more special and even more of a journey than just someone who won a title shot and cashed it in. It's genuine. I think his story is inspiring, and the fact that, you know, he's the first to admit that stuff he's done in the past wasn't great and he's sorry for it, and, you know, all he wants to do is get on with his life and get his head down. I think it's a genuinely inspiring story. Pastor did tell me to point out he's quite nervous talking, and he was very nervous talking about this, and he does what a lot of people do, and sometimes he just makes little flippant remarks and little jokes and stuff like that, and he doesn't want to come across in a strange way or anything like that. He's just, it is how he is when a microphone's in front of him. So, you know, he did say to explain he was nervous, and that's why sometimes he goes off on tangents and just says little things just to make himself smile, and that it's just his way of coping with dealing with, is a difficult subject. So I know you guys are cool with that, but I thought I'd explain it. Other plugs, obviously, please listen to everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. Super grateful that Scroobius Pip has given me opportunity to do this. We're nearly a year old now. Next week we'll be a year old. I'll still be in Orlando, but I'll put something out while I'm there. And then when I come back, we'll do the, probably about 10 days after the event, we'll do the actual sort of WrestleMania roundtable, hopefully with myself and Pip and a couple of other cool guests down in that London. If you're coming to WrestleMania this weekend, then go to morethanmania.com, buy tickets to come and see the Progress show at Friday lunchtime, noon Eastern Standard Time on Friday, or buy tickets to go to Progress versus Evolve, the WWN Super Show on Saturday evening, or come and see his Access, which is mental. The news was announced right after I put the podcast out last week. I already knew about it, wasn't a surprise to me. But yes, Progress matches are going to be put on at WWE's Access, which is just a sentence in itself, is nuts. If you came to Progress this past weekend and helped us celebrate our fifth birthday, thank you for being the reason I've got no voice now. I really appreciate it. Thank you for bringing weapons for the fans, bring the weapons match. Special credit to the person who bought a signed picture of Ed Miliband, not even in a frame, wasn't really a weapon. I mean, depending on your political allegiances, you might think he's a weapon. I mean, I like the bloke, couldn't eat a bacon sandwich, but I do like him. So thanks if you came to that. Obviously, if you want to support Progress, progresswrestling.com. We put the next show on sale last night and it sold out dead quick again, so soz, there's no tickets you can really buy at the minute. But progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com, and my website is jimsmallman.com. I've got a downloadable show that you can download there. Say you're traveling to Orlando and you want to do something for an hour on that flight, download it to your iPad or your laptop and watch it, and listen to me telling stories about my wife and my daughter. I'm really excited about this this podcast today. Do tweet me and let me know what you think. I'm at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. I know I spend a lot of time messing around and being silly, but I genuinely think, we still talk about silly stuff, but I genuinely think the meat of what we talk about in this podcast is really, really powerful. And there's moments you'll hear it, there's moments that Pastor is nearly in tears during it, and me watching him because he's my friend, it got to me as well. So have a listen and let me know what you think. Okay, enjoy, guys. I'll catch you on the other side.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Right. Hello, Pastor.
Hello, Jim.
Hello. I'm aware when we're doing this, people aren't that used to hearing you talk.
It's probably a good thing, you know? It's probably a good thing, considering.
The story I was telling someone the other day is about when you won the Natural Progression Series and we let you do a speech.
Wow!
And it was like... You've just said to me off before we started recording, you're nervous about doing this, but you're not.
Just a bit.
But you never seem nervous when you wrestle.
Hide it well, you know. I've got a lot of hair to cover my face.
Do you still get? I mean, you're not. I mean, you've been on for a bit. I mean, do you still get nervous when you wrestle? Is it still?
Now and again, there was something Dave Mastiff once said to me. Drop a name there, pick it up, and I can't. It was like a philosophy, a way of thinking, flow, I think it was. It was just be in the moment, you know what I mean?
Because you've never seen, even when you were like brand new, you never seemed nervous. I think it was one of the things that set you apart from other people who were perhaps coming through the projo at the time, was you always looked like, no, I totally belong here, it's fine. I mean, also having a massive beard probably does help because it, you know, it makes you look older than the 21 years you clearly are.
Yeah, so, and a rest.
For people who aren't aware of you, most of our listeners will be familiar with the Progress products and will be familiar with you to some degree. You are Pastor William Eaver, former Progress champion, which is quite nice.
Progress world champion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you something. Yesterday, when I was ring announcing the Pete Dunne Mark Andrews match. I know what I'm going to say as a ring announcer. In my brain, I went, should I say it's the world title today? Because people call it. And then I went, well, it is a world title. It's been defended overseas, including by yourself.
Yeah.
So you defended it in Ireland?
Republic of Ireland, Cork City, Cork Heck.
So I was like, maybe I should. But I'm so used to, I've got used to saying it in a sentence that I'm like, if I had world in, I'll probably just stumble over my words. I think that's what'll happen. But it is, you're right, former Progress world champion, Natural Progression Series 3 winner.
Yes, Mark Andrews, Flash Morgan Webster, Pastor William Eaver.
So it's good lineage.
Yep, absolutely.
And how long have you been wrestling now?
Circuit-wise, it'd be just over 3 years now.
Just over 3 years, yeah. So it's not bad for 3 years,
eh? I've done okay, you know, I've done okay.
And we're sat in your front room. And there's two title belts just knocking around. I'm presuming these are yours, rather than you're not the sort of person to just carry.
No, that's the old version of the WWE title. That's the Celtic Championship Wrestling's champion and Wrestling League UK's champion, which is it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's doing all right.
One thing that makes I think me, John, and Glenn proud as promoters is seeing people who have perhaps broken a little bit with us, like yourself. And like Chuck Mambo and Jack Sexsmith and Ginny and everybody, right? It's great seeing those guys and then them going, right, we're going to go and wrestle elsewhere. Even if it's even if it's that video of Damon Moser.
Steve Minnelli's Minnelli Mania shows.
with a bale of hay and a car. And like even stuff like
so
that
good.
Pops me.
So good.
I've wanted to talk to you for a bit and I've teased... This podcast over the last couple of weeks of doing Tuesday Night Jaw, I've teased it by saying I want to talk to you and I want to tell your story because it's something that it interests me and something I found fascinating and inspiring since I first met you. So, and I know it's one of the reasons you're nervous, and I know, but I think...
I'm just happy there isn't a camera on me right now, to be honest with you.
But I know it's a cool thing for us to talk about. So, when you were a kid, right, back before pre-beard, and I've seen a picture of you pre-beard, which genuinely surprises me because I wasn't even aware you had a chin.
Yeah, not Jimmy Hill, that's for certain.
So, can you remember how old you were when you got into wrestling?
When I first started training.
Oh, no, when you first time you ever watched it.
Oh, God. It was my older brother, a few years older than me. Used to watch him. We had a friend of the family, Trevor, who used to record them for us. Is that okay?
Yeah.
It's okay to record on VHS, you know what I mean? WWE and everything's watching.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine.
But yeah, my earliest memory of like a live show that we recorded was like WrestleMania 9 for me. And I remember being absolutely terrified of Doink the Clown when he was heel. His music.
Heel Doink was brilliant.
Oh my God. That music, terrifying.
There's a match, I think it's in Raw in 1990, probably 93. There's an episode of Raw where Doink wrestles Marty Jannetty. And it's a legit, a brilliant match. Heel Doink, Marty Jannetty. It's absolutely... Someone will tweet me, at Jim Spawn, hashtag Tuesday Night Joe, right? Someone will tweet me and tell me exactly what episode of Raw it is. And I will then show it you, and you can just watch it on the
network. I may have seen it. I can't recall. I know he's passed on now, the man who wrestled as Doink, but he was on the first WrestleMania. I think he worked Steamboat.
Matt Bourne.
Yeah, Matt Bourne, yeah. He worked Steamboat, yeah, as Matt Bourne, which was...
Maniac Matt Bourne. And what I love is that it's one of those gimmicks that people have bought and passed from wrestler to wrestler to wrestler. So there is an officially licensed Doink out there.
I thought you were going to say there's still officially a Maniac Matt Bourne out there. There might be.
It'd be slightly bizarre if we didn't do that. So, WrestleMania... How old were you at WrestleMania 9? Because I talked about my favourite WrestleManias last week, and I think the first one I remember watching, because... we'd recorded it, was WrestleMania 6. And then I went back and I had a mate whose parents had got divorced, so his dad had bought him loads of videos. So I used to just borrow all his videos. So I went back and watched all the WrestleManias, all the Survivor Series, all the Royal Rumbles that were out on Coliseum Home Video. And but yeah, I think I must have been maybe 11 when I think I was 11 when WrestleMania 6 was on. So... yeah, I mean, roughly what age would you be in WrestleMania 9? Because you're fairly younger than me. So you're quite
I don't know, what year was WrestleMania 9? Was it 93? 92?
I think it was... I want to say 93. Because first WrestleMania was 84, wasn't it? So I would say 93.
Yeah, 93, because obviously WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what? I would have been about 5, give or take. 90, yeah, 5-ish.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Little 5-year-old pastor.
Oh, God, yeah.
And... because you are, people will be able to detect from your accent, you are a Londoner, it is fair to say.
My accent is all about the place. I've got a bit of East London there, I've got a bit of Irish there, and got a bit of pasta there, I don't know.
I've met your mum.
My mammy, was yesterday.
Because it's, your mother was, is your mum Irish?
My mum is Irish, Cork City. Yes.
Yeah, so I remember meeting your mum, and some progress I sort of recall... when I met your mum, was it a progress chapter or was it an endeavour?
It was Endeavour 8 with Mason Ryan, big Mason Ryan, big Barry.
So there was two great things that happened during the you and Mason Ryan match, right? The first thing is we realised there's a lady on the front row.
You didn't realise I'm nervous, Jim.
Yeah, right. There's two great things that happened, right? There's a lady in the front, and I don't ring announce a lot of the Endeavour. Obviously, Endeavour's moved to being Freedom's Road now, and I don't tend to... because I'm me living in Wales, I don't tend to come down to one. And Glenn was away, so I got asked. I think it was right after Christmas, wasn't it? It was like a New Year one.
It was January, yeah.
And I got asked, John, do you want to ring announce? I went, yeah, no worries. I was in town anyway, and I wanted to come and see you guys. So I noticed that there was a lady sat in the front row who seemed really, really enthusiastic about you.
Jovial, yeah.
And I'm not suggesting she might have had a drink. She may have had a sherry. And I kept talking to her, and she was lovely to talk to. I talked to her in the ring, and she was lovely, and she was Irish. And I was like... And then someone came up to me and went, that's Pastor's mum. And I went, all right. And I think it was possibly after the match I introduced her as your mum. And then everyone, we just started a Mary chant. I'm fairly sure your mum's not called Mary. But obviously, your similarity to a certain important historical figure called Jesus.
I was going to say Cat Stevens. I said Cat Stevens.
It was brilliant. The fans were spontaneously like, "Oh, she's called Mary from now on." And I don't think I've ever laughed that hard. But also in that match, about 5 minutes into that match, Mason Ryan, who's a lovely guy, right?
Absolutely.
He's from near where I live, and now living in America in Cirque du Soleil, which is crazy.
Surreal, isn't it?
As an archer. But halfway through that match, it goes a little bit quiet, and some bloke from the back near the bar just goes, "Oh fuck, it's that bloke of NXT!" I was like, genius. How do you feel about family watching you? Because my dad's seen me do stand up loads. When my mum was around, my mum only maybe saw me do stand up maybe two or three times. So how do you feel about it?
I love it. I'd like to have them come down more. It's just them getting tickets for them progress shows. You know, they're quite hard to come by nowadays.
I'm fairly sure there's a friends and family policy.
I know. Get out of here. Them getting down it. It was really nice when I won the progress title, of course. I got to wrestle in Cork, defending Cork, and my mum and dad, who'd separated when I was younger, were both there to see me wrestle, which was like a real awesome moment. And they can both get to Cork City to come see me wrestle. Like London, Camden, you know what I mean? It's another story.
And presumably they live in London.
I know. Well, my old man is in Dublin, County Mead.
Right.
So it's easy for him to get to Cork. My mum's in London, so.
Yeah.
But yes, I always love it when they're there. My older brother was there for my first match against Flash at Endeavour 2, which was really cool. I remember he popped for the London Riots. Big fan of those, don't know why.
I've met your brother at least on one occasion. Could he
you've met my younger brother. You've met my younger brother, yeah.
Because he came over and went, "Hiya."
Infamously body slammed me on stage with X-Pac. shoot, as well, just doing promos. Thank you, Jimmy Havoc, by the way, for instigating that originally. And he just went for a body slam. I posted for him as
a pro.
I am.
You are.
And he nearly broke his back. Slams me. I sew away off the stage because he's half cut. He comes running, dives at me off the stage. Like, people were genuinely concerned because they thought, "Who's this lunatic?" Not realising it was my brother. Such is life.
So, when you were a kid, and who are the wrestlers, when you were a kid, who are the wrestlers that you're watching and going, "Oh, they're my absolute hero"? Because I'm always surprised at how people, like when I was a kid, to the difference between who I liked when I was a kid, to the difference to who I liked when I was a student, for example, and then the difference to who I like now as a promoter is very different. So who are you sort of into as a kid?
That brother right there who's standing there in the corner.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Brett the Hitman Hart, yeah.
I had a thought today while I was walking down Woolwich High Street. I had a really good thought. And that was, I walked past the charity shop and I was like, isn't it a shame Davey Boy Smith didn't have more children so there couldn't be a British Heart Foundation?
Oh.
I was
talking to you there the other day, funny enough.
I was like, yes. Brett Hart's a good one. I mean,
Don't mention him, because that was just by chance I got him out of a packet. Even though I respect him, but that's another story.
Mr. Reigns.
Handsome man.
Do you know what? I was talking to my missus about this, and I went, he's a good-looking man, Eddie Roman Reigns. I've said this on the podcast loads. Nothing angers me more than people chanting, "You can't wrestle." Because
Diddy chant.
Because it's hard to be a wrestler. The amount of stuff you've got, I've seen you, I remember watching you train, right? And I've...
You go on like, "I don't train anymore." That's
no, but I remember like seeing you, because I remember John saying to me, "We've got a load of trainees who are dead good. You need to come and see someone." And I came along, and I remember just watching anyone training in wrestling. You see them and go, "Oh, all the stuff you have to remember just to remember a basic sequence to not get hurt." And it's hard. It's not easy. And when people chant, "You can't wrestle," at someone like Roman Reigns, it genuinely makes me angry. And the reality is, there's loads. He's got loads going for him. He's a big dude, good-looking dude, and everything he does looks like it is. So, you know, I think he's nailing it.
As that work, my real life job, as they say, which is unfortunate, but I was explaining wrestling, or trying to give my view of wrestling to a non-fan, because they always ask the inevitable question with, like,
is it show?
You know, yeah, it's show wrestling. It's like, but it's, yeah, we know the result, it's predetermined, etc. But you've got to get across stuff to the fans. So you two ain't wrestling fans. You're the goodie, you're the baddie. You've got to go out there and get the fans on your side. You're a baddie, etc.
Yeah.
If you go out, you're the good guy, and they're booing you, unfortunately, like Mr. Range usually gets, you know, it's you're not doing your job, and you know, words to that effect. I'm still learning. So, but you know what I mean? It's not that clear cut. It's not just fake.
Oh, totally.
Or, excuse me.
It will always wind me up. People going, it's fake. Because, well, I mean, see what you look like at the end of You versus Sebastian.
Indeed. Four stitches.
And you still have the scar.
It's so. Absolutely lovely scar. Thank you, Sebastian. I appreciate that. Karma, I believe they call it.
Yes.
Is it karma?
Well, I mean, some might say that.
Some might say it. I don't know. I don't know why.
So, Bret the Hitman Hart, anyone else who, when you were a kid, you were like...
Owen, out of Britain, Owen, I was more, led more towards Owen, because I don't know...
Exactly the same.
Just, I don't know, like... They,
he was doing flips like, and stuff.
Oh,
he
was amazing!
It's mind-blowing stuff he was doing.
Oh my God, there was something... I'd done it in the match with Jack Gallagher, who's obviously, where he is now, just goes to show how great he is. I remember talking to him briefly at the time, where are you going with when are you going to get over to the E? I don't know, but he's there now. Anyway, yeah. And we done the little sequence, and I done the... It was a homage to Owen, where you go up, legs on the rope, backflip, and obviously Jack's an amazing post, which helped me get over, done a backflip, pulled him. I know it probably sounds like absolute gibberish on the thing. You know what I mean, but I tried it again at an endeavour, and I nearly necked myself. But yeah, he was so gifted, was Owen, do you know what I mean? Like I've known him for years.
I was watching, so the pay-per-view when he died, I was watching live. And I was watching live, and I remember feeling like it wasn't real. And then not being able to sleep. Because what I used to do, like, I'd watch them, and then I was at uni, so I'd have to get up the next day and go to uni. And I was watching it just going... I'm sure this isn't real. And my parents were on holiday in America at the time. And my dad rang me the next day and went, I know I don't watch wrestling. I know you're into it. Like, do you know where wrestlers died? I'm like, yeah. But because here, it wasn't really reported. Like, because...
Well, I'm trying to see it on Good Morning.
But it was massive news in the States. Whereas here, it was kind of like, oh, this has happened. And then, you know, people moved on to other stuff. But... It really bothered me for a long time, and I remember having on video the Owen tribute show that they did on Raw the next night, which I still think was actually really nice. And I know that
Austin doing the odds,
Austin doing the thing, and which when you actually find out more about it, that Austin and Owen weren't really good friends because of the neck injury Austin got. The level of respect that he had. And it's when he's mentioned, I think, in every wrestler of that era's autobiography, he's mentioned as, oh, he's a good ribber, everyone liked him. And all he wanted to do was retire, be a fireman, and spend time with his kids. And you're like, he was even a nice guy, you know, as well as a good...
But that's another thing, like they say, if it looks like he always looked like he was enjoying himself, having fun, that's what it's about. Have a laugh, have fun, you know what I mean? Obviously, we're putting, you know, we're working with each other, there's always scope for injury and stuff, but just go out there, enjoy yourself, obviously. Oh. He was the man, you know what I mean? Like, Owen.
Yeah. So, there must have been a point, there must have been an age when you were, I'm going to presume, a teenager, where you went, I might have a go at this wrestling business.
Always wanted to do it.
Always?
Always.
You reckon from the first time you saw it?
Always. Always been a dream of mine to wrestle.
As a kid, were you into sport and were you sporty or anything like that?
Here's the thing, like, a bit of football here and there and everything else. But not really, like, I used to try and get out of PE and everything like that, you know, like, I wouldn't say I wasn't athletic or, like, you know what I mean, like, we used to run around, cycle, whatever, but yeah, like, nothing, I've never really drawn to any sort of sport, like, yeah, a little bit of football and stuff, but I never really wanted to get it part of the team, you know what I mean, stay off school, just wanted to have fun, go about, watch a bit of wrestling, have a bit of a wrestle with mates,
yeah,
you know what I mean, stuff like that.
Do you have a backyard or anything like that?
Well, What is backyard? And do you actually have a fed and stuff? Yeah, obviously we had little kind of things when we were kids. I remember my pal Michael, you had the King of the Ring. We used to make belts out of cardboard and like Meccano. And he showed me a picture of it recently after I'd won the Progress title. He said, "Don't forget your first ever title with Martin." And whoever he is. I remember I beat one of my pals with a shoot wrist lock or a hammer lock actually at the time for that belt in particular. But yeah, always, like I said, that's always what I wanted to do. That's been, for as long as I can remember, what I wanted to do, just finding the school or going out of my way to get to a school.
So you started training fairly young, didn't you?
I don't know. It was 18 I originally finally found a school to go to, because I was aware of FWA's Academy in Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
But like...
which is produced, I want to say Mark Haskins.
Skins, I believe. Yeah. Who else come out of there?
Maybe Marty, actually.
Mike
Skell.
Oh yeah, Mike Skell, Andy Simmons, of course.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Is it PJ Black as well?
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's a fun little fact there. I'm sure I see it on cagematch.net.
which is a useful resource for us all.
Yeah, absolutely. I never got down to Portsmouth. When I did start training at 18, I think FWA Academy was just winding down at the time. But started in Edmonton, London for LDN, for those who don't know.
Now, what's going to be interesting at this point is people are going to go, they're going to have done maths, because we talked about WrestleMania 9 earlier on, and they're going to go, we said he's been wrestling 3 years, and he said he started training at 18, but then he said he was 5 in 1993. I'm quite confused. What's happened? Now, I know what's happened, and I didn't know this for a long time. I knew you for ages, and I heard about it from, I think John told me. So, you had to take a little bit of a break from wrestling training, didn't you? It's fair to say.
Yeah, this is true.
And this is the crux of... I want to talk about all kinds of wrestling stuff, and we'll get back to it. I want to talk about your Progress title reign and how that felt for you and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's important to set this up and talk about it, because I've said this to you for a while, and I know some of it you'd be like, oh, I'm a bit nervous about it. But, you went to prison for a bit. Which,
Jesus, don't mince your words. No, fair play.
This is. I don't know, because me and you kind of joke about it now, because I've known you for a bit. But it's something that, from my point of view, as a promoter, and someone who employs you on a fairly regular basis, my initial impression of you was, he's a nice lad. Fuck me, he's hard working. This is all I've ever... And this is before I knew any... And finding out your past didn't change my opinion of this, because all you've ever presented yourself to me and John and Glenn is super professional, super hard working, and a nice to everybody. Really one of the most respectful people. I think I remember telling you off. I think it was when you were Progress champion, you were still helping set the fucking ring up.
You can always help out.
Yeah, but this is like, you are one of the most hardworking people I've ever.
No, do we want on a serious one? I'm going to drop another name here. Shah Samuels, hope you don't mind. I recall, remember, we was helping take down the ring, and we were at the after show after a Progress show, and he was like, "Yeah, mate, I see you carrying that the ring post. Yeah, it's all well and good. Yeah, you look hard. But when the ring's getting taken down, you know what you want to grab? The ring bell." Good advice. And I should really take heed. No, of course, pay your dues.
Yeah.
Obviously, Shah meant that in jest.
So, and we had a chat about this a little while ago. I think me and you and John, we sat in a coffee shop in London, and we talked about it, because I wanted to get your handle on it, because it was one of those things that I was always hearing about secondhand and people telling me stuff, and I'd never just said, what happened? And so, I speak as someone who's got a past. My past is on my Wikipedia page. It's fairly unavoidable. That's how my mum found out about it. And I've never been in prison or anything like that, but I'm very upfront about it. I am a drug addict. I am an alcoholic. They're two things that I am. been straight edge for 18 years. You're also straight edge.
Indeed.
I would say possibly for similar reasons to me.
Don't work for us. Don't work for us.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it doesn't. But you, from how you sort of described it to me, it's not like, you weren't like a troubled kid. It's just, you just kind of, you made some daft decisions, didn't you? I think it's fair to say.
I was talking to someone from Rapt, who I'm doing a bit of work with at the moment for London Marathon and stuff.
Which we'll plug that one massively down, because I think it's really good.
In a sec. And it's just being comfortable with who you are, do you know what I mean? Like, I never, like, you ask yourself, who am I? What am I about? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, why do I do these things? Why do I drink? Why do I say smoke weed or take drugs or whatever? Do you know what I mean? Like, why do you do these things? And I used to, my original thing for drinking and everything else was like, I drink to get drunk, you know what I mean? Not just one drink. Like, you go to the bar, what are you having? Orange juice. Get out of here. You're not having orange juice. Have a drink. Like, these were my sort of mentality with alcohol, you know? And then, why did I drink? To get drunk. Why do I need to get drunk? To socialise. Why do I need to be drunk to socialise? Do you know what I mean? Just be yourself. Just be comfortable. I don't know. I always felt uncomfortable with me. Never feeling like I could fit in with people. Don't know why. It's just my mind, my head that was on my shoulders.
It's surprising hearing it now, because I find you backstage at shows. You're not the life and soul of the party, but you are. You're pretty there. You know what I mean? You're not a quiet person in the corner. You talk to everybody. Everybody likes you. Like, you're a nice guy to have around. You weren't on the show yesterday, but you popped down for, even though you couldn't be older, were you working yesterday?
I had to leave at fucking 5 to get to work.
So,
bane of my existence.
So,
pays the bills. So.
But again, this is the thing, like, you've turned up after working nights to wrestle progress shows because you want to do this.
Of course.
And that level of commitment and intensity is amazing. And not having, this is my big positive take from this is, and, you know, I have a history of some, my sister and my uncle's worked in prisons for ages. And there's the way that society paints anyone who goes to prison, which is, oh, they've gone to prison and done something wrong. Now, you're the first person who, when we spoke about this in the past, you've gone, yep, I did something wrong. And I was completely in the wrong. I'm sorry. And you went to prison and you learned from it. And people can be rehabilitated, and this is the big
absolutely
positive thing I want to take
100%.
Away is you are for me a poster boy for rehabilitation, because like I said, when you were, how old were you when you went to prison?
I just turned 20. I just turned 20 years old,
and because it was for, I know you don't mind saying, so it was for assault, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
You got sent to prison for. Now, how long did you get sentenced for?
I got sentenced, I remember now, it was February 16th, 2009, 2 days after Valentine's Day. Don't know why that was significant, but it was February 16th, and I originally got 4 years, 10 months sentenced, to which I would have served 2.5 years for a determinate sentence. For those of you that, the sentence I received, it wasn't a determinate sentence. It was an indeterminate sentence. For anyone that knows what an indeterminate sentence is, it's a sentence where you have to sort of like, I don't know why I'm looking away to look at you when I'm saying this. Indeterminate sentence is it's effectively a life sentence. You can't just serve your time and get released.
Is it one where you have to kind of show that you've been rehabilitated and show remorse and stuff like that before they will actually grant
you? To a degree.
Because it wasn't a phrase I was used to until you told me about it.
Yeah, the sentence in itself, the IPP has been abolished, but obviously not in retrospect, so those that have had it in the past will still have it. You can't just get it taken off. I did appeal against it, but it's another story. So I had to attend parole boards and stuff and show that I had worked with the system to rehabilitate. And to be honest, I did get a lot taken away from the courses that they put on my sentence planned for me to be rehabilitated. Like, just little things, little courses that would help you pause, take a second, use self-talk. Why must you, like, impulsively react to something? Why can't you just take a moment? Why do I do these things? It's all, like, philosophical, you know, to a degree, the mind. Pause, take a second. You know, and I had to attend parole boards. I First parole board I attended was 2010. It was over tariff. It's incredible talking like this prison stuff, you know, to I don't know how many people are going to be listening to this, which is could be quite vast. I had to attend the parole board. It was over tariff, just over tariff, two years, 6 months, whatever it was. And I got an open conditions DCAT status, which put me in an open prison. And I was devastated when I got there, you know. Yeah, it was progression. It was a progression, but I wanted to go on, you know. Mm. I'd done the courses that they asked of me to done. Like, I took on board everything that was on the courses. To be fair, the reasoning behind that was I still in my head was like, I'm going to set realistic limits for my alcohol intake, which was the root of my crimes, you know, as was my thinking, but the alcohol led me astray as well. So in hindsight, at the time it was good. I was devastated at the time, but looking back, it was the best thing for me going forward to spend the remainder year or whatever it was in an open prison so I could go out on a weekend or whatever. And that led me on to finding Wrapped. I'm not going too...
No. And what's Wrapped stand for, just so people know?
Wrapped is the Rehabilitation for Addicted Prisoners Trust.
Right.
I'm going off on a tangent here, but anyway, I was in open conditions, and I actually met someone called Martin Johnson. I don't know why I said met someone like that. met Martin Johnson, who was another like mine. I don't know why I'm dropping his name. He's a great bloke, and he was another person in addiction who was serving a similar sentence. So it's mad how you become attracted to people. You get attracted. The law of attraction. The secret. Got talked with Martin, and he was a Wrapped graduate. And we were talking, we were both having to go for parole and stuff, both in the term of sentence. Different paths, but the same. We both met each other. Anyway, he suggested to me that I come along to a Wrapped meeting within the prison. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give it a go, see how it is for me. Went there. You know how you introduce yourself at meetings and whatnot. I am, so-and-so. And I'm there listening to everyone, and then it come to me. Hi, I'm Martin, I couldn't define myself. I couldn't see it. Like, I guess I'm an alcoholic, I said, you know. And yeah. I went to the rooms and I listened to the shares. I know they say you shouldn't talk outside of the room, but this is just my experience. And the more I listened to people's shares, the more I could relate, and the more it was the thinking behind it that I could relate to. And the more I listened, and then I realised that my thinking is that of an alcoholic, an addict. Not an alcoholic, but an addict,
yes.
You know? And I'm very grateful that I got a chance to go into those rooms, because that helped me, my final piece in the whole plan for my thinking within the drinking plan and stuff. Because drinking's not for me. Mm. The first drink I had, it was after my Holy Communion, believe it or not. Like, you know, everyone's celebrating, a can of beer. I must have been about six. Had it, I woke up in the middle of the night, threw up. Obviously, it was just there. I shouldn't have had the drink, etc. And then I had another drink when I was like 10 years old. And there was two bottles of wine. It was called the Dog's Bollocks, Jim. The Dog's Bollocks, right?
It's a classy drink.
And there's me being a big man, 10 years old, had to show that under man. I drank these bottles of wine, and I threw up. If it weren't for my older brother turning me on my front, I could have choked on my own vomit. It was that bad. And these things, these should have been like, obviously 10 years old, why am I drinking for a start? Just trying to show off or whatever.
See, I started drinking when I was 13, so I totally get you.
It weren't like I was drinking all the time. It was just because it was there. Like my mum must have been out or something. It was with friends. Had the drink. And that should have shown that alcohol does not work for me. Mm. Like, it doesn't work for me, but... You drink with friends and stuff. I'm going off on a wild tangent, Jim, but that's me in a nutshell. But yeah, like, always drinking, and you're smoking and everything else. And I stopped smoking, started drinking a bit more. And like I said, these eventual things, being that not being comfortable with myself, led me into a situation where I'd get into trouble. I'd start fights with people, you know, for no reason. Mm. Like, I'd go out and drinking, and I never intentionally went out to start trouble. But I'd have a few drinks, I'd get a bit wild or whatever. wouldn't rein myself in, and then I was punished. And do you know what? Like, obviously, going back to where I was in prison. I served 4 years, 10 months. I eventually got my parole in May 2013. And, you know, I'm grateful for the experience. I say this with my eyes welling up, but if I hadn't been away, who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have, I could have been dead. I could have been LDN champion. You know, like I'm grateful for the experience because I found, like, again, another thing, I found progress, which is ridiculous. I don't say like progress is the holy grail or anything like that, but I've got a lot to thank for you guys. You know.
This is the thing is
a lot of things have come
when because
good for me
when we first chatted about this and we were sat in that coffee shop in it was in Leicester Square because I think I'd just done a bit of voiceover work or something. I mean, you and John met up and this is the thing. I think I've spoke to you about this in detail. And it's a similar thing. We were chatting at the last progress show. You were at the merch stand and we were talking about you doing the London Marathon and you still get emotional about this, but it's. And this is the powerful thing for me. It's so easy for people in society to go, someone went in prison and did something wrong. Now, you're never denying that. You know you did something wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you're also, you know that you are now a 100% different person to what you were then. You know,
Think it's changed, like, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you say, knowing that if you'd have carried on down, it's almost like you needed that intervention of prison to actually set you on the right path. And this is where
unfortunately,
that situation
yes.
works.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would have been great if you never had to go through it. But, and I know there was one story that you told me when we did have the initial chat about this, which was, and it was something to do with you, it was bringing the fact that it was an indeterminate, it's that indeterminate sentence. Because it's like you say, a lot of the time, people will get sentenced to 4 years and they'll maybe be out in 2 years. And that'll be what their solicitor will say to them. But in an indeterminate sentence, until you prove yourself worthy of being released, you ain't getting parole.
I know the story you're referring to. I'll tell you that story. I was in HMP Chelmsford, for those that might be curious, at the start of my sentence. And what you're saying about that as well, I was in Chelmsford for about 15 months before I got moved on to another category prison because Chelms is a local holding prison, and this is incredible, Jim, that I'm talking a prison like this. And anyway, like you're saying, like I see a lot of people come and go, and they're like repeat offenders. You know, it's very sad to see. I'd seen one guy in particular, he come in about three times within that 15 month period, and when he eventually did get, he got stung hard. But that's him. That's his path. I've gone off my drinking. Loads of people told me, Martin, your drinking's bad, etc., etc. And people tell me to the blue in the face about my ways of drinking, but I had to see it for myself. The story in particular, I was working in the kitchens at HMV Chelsea, which was great for eating. We used to drink 10 cups of milk a day and all these sort of fucking divvy things, try and bulk up. But anyway, I went to check my payment because you did get paid, like it was a pittance. It was like £15 a week you'd earn working in the kitchens, making sandwiches and the food and preparing it and whatnot with other civils in there. And I went to check my money, and we went on to one of the guys in the civils. He's on the computer tapping away, da da da. My name comes up, and next to it said 99 years. And, you know, like obviously you see someone there say 8 months, whatever, mine 99 years. And I just looked at it and I was like, my heart sank. Mm. You know, I knew my situation, knew where I was, but like, yeah, I didn't realise the severity of that sentence until I'd seen that 99 years. It's like, I could be here for the rest of my life.
Yeah. You know when stuff like that obviously hits your brain, it inspires you to, clearly in your case, inspires you to actually think, I've got to do something about this. And obviously your involvement with RAPT when you're in the prison clearly made you go, right, I need to, and that changed your outlook. I mean, what else was there in prison that was inspiring you to want to get out of there and turn stuff around?
I'm trying to think. The thing that inspired me, Tom, I just, it's hard to say. Like, it's hard to answer the question. And when I was there, I just wanted to get do my time. Like, my original thinking was, like, I done wrong to get into prison. Doing wrong ain't going to get me out. What's that effect? Do you know what I mean? I knew if I start pissballing about and trying to go against the system, I wasn't getting out. Loads of people said, "Oh, Martin, like look, you were saying, the way I came across when I first met you, professional, everything like that." A lot of people couldn't comprehend why I was in prison for. How are you in here, Martin? Do you know what I mean? You know, I can be a dick. I could be a first class dick, and I was. That's why I was there. In the first place. But yeah, I just everything I tried to do educational courses to try and give me a better chance of employment once I got released. I'd done bits and pieces. I obviously followed the sentence plan that my probation officer had set for me in terms of my problems with my anger and drinking and thinking, you know, like what inspired me just to try and be better, just better myself, so I would go out and I wouldn't have me dick in me hands,
yeah,
and fall into the cycle again. Because a lot of people worried that I'd come out and I'd get knocking back with my old pals and start falling back into old routines. Mm. That wasn't the case. When I got out, my plan was, like, even my pal Michael, I mentioned, he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm doing a bit of MMA. When you come out, do you want to do that?" No, I want to get back on the horse with wrestling. I want to get back to training and stuff. So just, I just wanted to get my time done.
Yeah.
Make sure I had something when I got out. I got into the weights and stuff when I was in there, just to try and get in shape, stay in shape. Just because all that keeps your mind occupied. You have something to look forward to while you're there.
Also, as well, I mean, because you're a big dude, right?
Big. Yeah, I don't know, but we were talking about the Yanks, how big they are compared to the Americans.
But you are. But I mean, you are. I mean, you.
This is a small.
But I, because I remember first seeing you and going, oh, because often when wrestlers are new, they look, you see people growing into their, I mean, I remember watching a video of the late Chris Travis when he was maybe 19, 20 years old, and he was a stick, and then he filled out and got bigger and bigger and bigger, and he was never massive, but he was, you know, he looked like a wrestler when he was at the peak of his career, and you've always looked like a wrestler, like. And it never.
Thank you.
But it never struck me. It never struck me that he probably, when I found out about your past, it was never like, well, he probably got into doing weights and stuff there, because the amount of trainees who will go to the Projo or whatever, and they're like, oh, I've got to lift weights. Well, yeah, you got to be able to lift a dude up.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's. Were you? I mean, while you're in, I mean, did you find out?
Me.
Did you find out when you got released? Did you find out? Did they sort of say to you, right, you get that out next week, or was it how did you find out?
Yeah, for me as well, it wasn't as clear cut. They wanted me to stay in a hostel for a period of time once I got released as well. So you had to find a hostel, which I had done. Obviously on home leaves, I stayed at a hostel in a, funnily enough, just around the corner from the garage in Highbury in a. Which is a shame. I could have probably started coming to the show from about chapter 6 or 7.
Ah, oh, didn't know that.
Unfortunately, my first experience for the chapters was chapter 12. We need a bigger room, you know, yeah. Like, which was amazing. Yeah, just another story. But yeah, like, they had to find a hostel. Like, my last parole board that eventually got released, I was so nervous. I get very nervous. And, I like nearly had a panic attack. I had to take a moment. The members of the board, they were like, do you want to take a moment outside? Because it's just, I didn't want to have to, they didn't want them to go knock me back and say, oh, you have to do another 10 months. I really, like, obviously you want to go on, you know what I mean? Like, Shawshank Redemption, you know, like, when Morgan Freeman's character eventually gets released, he's just like, well, I've done everything, what do you want me to do? Like, he just goes in there blasé, and he gets out. Like, I never went in there blasé, just, don't even know why I brought that up. but I did.
This is what I love when you're nervous, is you do go off on bizarre habits, and I enjoy them. Having seen you nervous.
Oh, Red, where is he now? I've read another story. But yeah, like, I did. I've got a date set. Originally, I think it might have been the 23rd of May, and I used to, the 23rd of every month. I don't remember it now, but it was May.
Yeah.
And I tell you this, everything seems so much brighter, and it just, once, obviously, once you've had it, you've I would say taken away, it was my fault, the reason why I got put away. But when you have everything again, everything was just so much greater. Like, even on a home leave, right, I went down to drop kicks in Purfleet, and I went and I did a training session there, and I done my research on Progress, and I told John the reason that I was drawn to Progress, because I was a fan of Ring of Honor growing up, and I remember the strong style element, and you had a seminar with Raven. We were talking about wrestlers. My lord, Raven is the geezer. Just like he's doing a podcast himself. I don't know why.
And everyone switches off that.
No, but he don't even talk about wrestling. But yeah,
no, Raven's one of my heroes. I love him. In the corner of the ring, he's so much show, and I'm not, I feel like Raven.
But like I said, you've done seminars with McGuinness, and I've missed the one with Raven, unfortunately. And I was like, got to get down. I trained at Dropkicks when I first got out. Me and Mark Hendry, and Hendry had been training with Dropkicks and Progress. I was like, I'm gonna get down. And I went there one Saturday with Cell, another guy from Dropkicks. I met Jimmy, and that's another story again. Like, I'm gonna tell this story. I don't care. Me and Cell were walking down the road where the original Projo was, or the second incarnation of Projo was, and we're walking. And I see Gemma on the way there. Got there. I won't mention that part. We got there anyway, and Ali was out there. Rio O'Reilly was there. Ali Armstrong, that is, old geezer. And I got there and I went, so is this the rugby club? And they went, no. I said, well, I hope it's not wrestling, as I inevitably try and do my awkward ways. I went down like a lead balloon, but yeah, met Jimmy, and he kicked the fuck out of us, and I loved it. I remember saying to him, I originally trained under Justin Richards as well, for LDN, and his no-nonsense style of training, like, he'll beast you and you'll learn so much more. Like, and I said to Justin, I said to Jimmy as well, like, I love their training, the way they train you, because I benefited so much training under both of them, especially Jimmy. Jimmy was the one who kind of rounded me off and showed me how to take heat properly and stuff. I'm still learning, of course.
That's the thing I argue about you, though. You're the first to say you're still learning. If you wrestle someone who's been going a bit longer than you, I always see you asking for feedback and wanting to get better. And it's the same with everyone who's kind of come through the project, or anyone who's newer to wrestling. Just watching people saying, can I have feedback on this? Yeah, because you want to get better, right? And I suppose in your case, you've had more time to think about this stuff. Because presumably when you're in prison for 4 and a bit years, you were sitting there thinking, well, I'm going to make some plans for when I'm out of it. And I'm going to really... If you think about how... So you will have seen this. When you started training, you will have seen people who turn up and they do 2 weeks and they never come back.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was no danger of that ever happening with you.
Oh, no,
because
no,
had longer to think about it.
That as well. Like, another one, I'll just go back. I remember it was... I started getting Power Slam sent in to me. Power Slam magazine, grew up reading it and stuff, and obviously I've been out of the loop. My only other kind of ways in which I could be up to date was, like, I had the SmackDown vs. Raw 2010, and I'd seen, like, Sheamus was there, and, like, I think I heard a radio advert about Sheamus being the champion, and I was like, wow, do you know what I mean? Like, I remember watching SOS on the wrestling channel.
Watching SOS on wrestling.
Oh my god, coming straight from a Dublin town. Woo, and all this fucking madness. And it was incredible. And I've got this Power Slam magazine. I open it up, and who do I see walking down WrestleMania with the big gold around his waist? Only Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, you know? And I remember watching him on the wrestling channel and thinking, he's so fucking awesome. Like, just the way he come out the final countdown. Yeah. And it's so amazing. And, like, alright, you think he's so good, but, like, WWE's the way they had talent at the time, it's like he ain't big enough to be, you know what I mean, become getting the WWE into whatever. That's just, you know, like the general consensus and stuff. And seeing him with the big gold around his waist, it was like, it blew my mind, you know what I mean? Like, I can't comprehend. But that's like, getting Power Slam sent in was the original thing. I remember people getting all nuts sent in. People are getting the odd Razzle sent in. I was like, and what am I getting? I'm getting Power Slam with Big Brock Lesnar on the fucking front of it. Jesus. the looks I was getting, but so what? Do you know what I mean? Fucking, I love wrestling. I love the grats.
I am.
As for you, Mambo.
When you came out, like, did you have to sort of report to someone and go, by the way, just so you know, I'm doing wrestling?
Oh, right? My God. I still do. I'm still under probation. I still have to report every so often, and I have to get, you know, it's all fun, funny, you have a laugh, and then we get back to the seriousness. I have to report to probation, and even if I have to travel abroad, I know a lot of promoters are probably wondering why I have to ask about details, where am I staying with my flights and stuff like that, because I have to report everything through this channel,
And no, you see, you have had a chance to, and I know that, because one of the reasons I want to do this podcast with What's Ahead of Us This Week is, so I've had people go in, Why's Pasta not going to America? Which is kind of it's in some case, and I've said this to you before.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe you will get your chance to go to America, and in particular, I think you'll get your chance to go to Japan, because I think in Japan they will look at you and go, "Hey, Bruiser Brody."
Bruiser Brody is 6'6".
But there's elements of what you do. Is with me being such a mark for, one of the reasons I enjoy watching you is I'm a mark for Japanese wrestler. Imagining you in Japan is for me, I'd love that, because I think if we was to make a film of your life, your story and your redemption from someone who did something wrong, has learned from his mistakes, and has worked so hard to be a success in something, whilst knowing that there may be, because of your past, there may be a ceiling on it, and you've still thrown everything in it and worked really hard. And that's why it's nice that you have had the chance to go out to Ireland, you have had the chance to go out to Germany, and you'll still keep getting those opportunities. You'll still keep getting opportunities with us, and with it, you know. It's not like there's not any wrestling companies in Britain now, is there? There's 8,000 of them.
It's doing all right, isn't it? The scene's doing all right.
But I think
very healthy.
And that's one of the things I think is most powerful about you, is that you have not. You've not just sat there and gone, okay, well, some of these opportunities I might not get as soon as everybody else does because I'm still under probation and stuff like that. You've gone, okay, well, I might not get them, but you know what? I'll work my hardest to make sure. You could be so blasé about what you do and go, do you know what? I'm a progress champion. I could do a load of British shows, phone it in. And that never comes across. What comes across is you going, right, my best option for the future of my career is be really good. And then everyone will have no reason other than to listen to me.
I hope so.
But I think it's working. You know, one of the reasons your past was directly one of the reasons that we wanted to make you progress champion, because we.
What was it? My God given talent? No,
and your God given talent. But
get out of here.
But it's knowing there's people who work hard, right? And then there's people who work hard and they've had adversity. And there's plenty of people, plenty of wrestlers who've had plenty of adversity in their lives.
Of course, I'm sure.
But, you know, be it illness, be it family problems, whatever. But the fact that you started training, had that four and a bit year gap, and then came out and went, right, I'm into this now. I mean, how long was it from when you got out to when you made your debut for us?
May 2013, and I debuted November 2013.
So you hit the ground running, mate. Like, you were...
I had to make up for lost time, do you know what I mean?
And it really showed, because I remember John, because I used to go to the Endeavours and stuff, and I remember John saying to me, because I used to do the commentary, and I remember John going,
oh, yeah, with that Jimmy Barnett, wasn't it?
Apparently, well, it might have been, but
still speculation.
But I remember John saying to me, you know, knowing what I like in wrestling, he's like, you're like Pasta. And as I've said to you on countless occasions, I like your personality in and out of the ring. I really enjoy your work inside the ring. I think it's great. But there's just one thing about you in ring I do not like. And that's your fucking name.
What's wrong with the name?
Look,
William Evo, it's the best.
Who came up with the name? Who was it?
Come up with the name, alright.
Was it Brightley?
Yes. What do you mean? He's got great ideas, this John, doesn't he?
John is a genius and my business partner, and I love him. But
what?
But
But I don't like puns.
And I've said this before.
You mean it's a pun? William Eve is a pun. Educate me. Get out of here. No way. Pastor William Eve. No way.
Because I remember being told your name and I went, I'm sorry, what? And John explained it and it's a pun. And I went, I'll be honest, I've made my peace with it now and I've got used to it. And I love the fact that you get the we believe chance and we get and just being able to be called pastor, having a nickname, like, it's almost like Mick Foley's nickname. Like, I've seen people call Mick Foley Cactus still now, and you've now got one of those nicknames. Pastor is now your nickname forever. You're not Martin, you're Pastor. That's
who's Martin? Right. Stop talking.
You kept saying it.
Who's a strawberry?
But
it's a good name, by the way.
But so who came up with the name?
It was Brian Eater. And to his credit, if you heard the first name he come up with, which was Evangelicist, right? You'd be forgiven for thinking William Eve was a pun.
Fuck's sake.
I remember John, thank you so much for the William Eve, because I just like the name personally, but Evangelicist, I remember you saying it and I was like, it's too clever, John, you know, it's too clever.
When did you become aware that you might look a little bit like Jesus?
I was getting it for ages, even when I was away, you know, like, everywhere I go. I still get it today. And it doesn't upset me. It doesn't...
Because looking at a picture of you when you were a sort of skinny kid and you were doing your... I've seen pictures of you doing LDN. And you trained, this is true, isn't it? You trained at LDN with Sebastian.
Yes, I did. Should put his shoot name in.
No.
It's Sebastian.
But that I find mind-blowing, because both of you, I mean, he sort of was doing other stuff and then came back to wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, because I remember seeing a picture of one of your Facebook walls. I remember seeing a picture and going, no, that's Pastor. Because how you look now to how you look then is, everyone looks different. I mean,
you look a bit like you, but if you had thicker eyebrows. Yeah.
but, you know, you with no beard and everything, and as a skinny kid, it's hard to imagine compared
Less
to...
Less than a skinny, would you?
Was there a point, because if you started growing a beard and stuff, when you presumably you're inside, like, was there a point where you're like, right, I don't think I'm going to grow a big old beard and have long hair now? Was that...
To be fair, I've always wanted to grow my hair, but you get to that awkward length and just retire it, just say, fuck it, give us a one all over, please, French crop.
Yeah.
Same with a beard, I was always trying to grow a beard and whatnot. And, just... persevered with it. Actually, even when I was away, I was growing it and I'd give up certain periods. And then one time I see a lad in there who's I met in the gym, and I saw his card, his prison ID, and I was like, fucking hell. I said, look at you now, long hair, everything like that. And this was 2010, and I said, that's it, boom. And that's given me it. And from there, just grown it since. for all caution to the wind, who gives a fuck? And The prison officers were giving us it. Oh, all right, Jesus. This, that, and the other on the streets, I'd get it. And eventually, even people at training used to say, when I first come to the pro, Joe, there was another lad who I didn't realise at the time, I met him again, Ed Gamestar, who's a worker and does bits and pieces. And we were like the two Jesuses. We were joking around at training. Anyway, Jimmy suggested I watch a film. Like, we were doing promo class one time and we were all given like things to watch, and it was Red State by one of Kevin Smith's films, later films. I watched it. In all fairness, I just thought it was absolute drivel, but there was a character in it. It's a shite film, but I
really
don't know.
Jimmy having to see this. Just know what film buff he is, and the fact you've got is absolute drivel.
Just didn't work for me, you know what I mean?
Turn the table over.
But there was a mad maniacal pastor in it, who sort of like the West Baptist Church sort of mad sort of stuff. And that day before Endeavour 2, John and Jim were talking, like, so what's your name going forward? John dropping the Evangelicist, and I was like, oh, that's clever, John. And I said, what about Pastor Martin Kelly? You know, like, I said, what do you think about that? Like, I said it in a sort of like, never going to use that. And Jimmy and John look at each other and I go, yeah, Pastor Martin Kelly. I said, am I fucking using my real name? Like, you know what I mean? Martin Kelly. lovely name, fantastic name, whoever he is. But I just thought, Kelly, do you know what I mean, wrestling-wise, like, Kelly for a man, you know, personally, I just think, all right, you've got Kelly Slater, a surfer and everything else, but I just,
yeah,
that, I'm just going to talking nonsense. But then John dropped, what about William Eva? I said, yeah, do you know what, I like the name, William Eva, I like it. I think it's a strong name, William Eva, do you know what I mean? And he was like, do you get it? And I was like, no. he goes, what's William short for? Will? No. Bill. Bill Eva. Fantastic. Yes. I love it even more. I know you detest it, but come on, it could have been Evangelicus.
I've made my peace, mate. I've made my peace with it. Now I know it could have been Evangelicus.
And there's a worker. There is an actual worker in the States who has the same name, Evangelicus. Yeah.
Oh,
true story.
Let's set that match up. let's bring him over and set
talking
it.
Talk about dream matches. Christopher Daniels, he's doing all right. He's a big inspiration on for me growing up, the Fallen Angel.
Was he?
Say, I was about 21. And pictures of him on the ball. When I was...
So you come out.
Big pop for him.
And you... Now, because obviously, is it part of your release that you have to... Presumably you have to get a job and stuff. So... Because have you been doing pretty much the same? Because you still have a shoot job. Have you been doing pretty much the same job for?
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is, I mean, look, down to give specific. Roughly, what do you do apart from the wrestling?
Working. What do you say? Construction, sort of railway industry. You know what I mean?
Which is quite. It's. I was talking to my sister about this, and she said it's quite common for people who've been in prison to work
to make industry. That transition. Yeah. Yeah.
And again, I know that you work. You work legitimately hard at this. You take it seriously. You're not the sort of person to...
This is wrestling, not the real life fucking work. The job, oh, Jesus.
But you, again, that, I suppose, having your freedom taken away from you and doing a job in a prison where you're getting 15 quid a week, and then when you come out and get in a legit job, is, again, I think that reflects on your work ethic with everything else. It's like I said before, there's times when you've wrestled on progress shows or you've come just to set the ring up and you've worked nice and you've come along.
Oh,
apologise to me for being late when you're like 5 minutes late and you've just worked nights. And I think that, again, that work ethic has always played into my perception of you being a hard worker. And it's not just, it's like people know that I work, people will look at me and go, he does 20 minutes on stage, he does a podcast and writes the odd thing. You can't work hard. And I was explaining the other day, I work 12 hours a day because I'm always either thinking or writing or creating or driving somewhere. And I think that work ethic that you've got away from wrestling seems to have reflected within wrestling. And obviously you still need... Wrestling's a fantasy world and you can't... You know, you can probably only wrestle 3 times a week because that's when shows tend to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't necessarily... You still have to have a job to ground you. And, I mean, I think you've told me this before, your work are pretty cool with you being a wrestler as well, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, well, you know...
Yeah.
My foreman, he tells me about his kids, and they keep going, oh, this John Cena fella, is this John Cena? Don't know, never heard of him. big JC, never heard of him. I know another JC. They try and give a stick. I was actually showing a match, I actually showed to Sebastian, the last match of Sebastian.
The one with the scar.
Yeah, the old bar.
The crucifix bomb into some chairs.
Oh, yeah, the lashings. Yeah. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, them lashings. Oh, God.
A lot of people, when I did the little Progress is 5 thing this week, a lot of people picked that match out as their favourite match ever, which shows that a lot of you are very sick.
Sadistic.
It was. Because obviously with that, and I don't want to go into too much detail about where we were going to go with it initially, because I don't want to...
secret.
But, because we know. But what I think is interesting is you guys, yourself and Sebastian, you all deserve credit for this, and all the people who were involved in the periphery, like Chuck Mambo, Jack Sexsmith.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
We took something that happened at Brixton Academy, which is an accident happening in the ring, with the first match that you guys were meant to have.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of meant to stop things. And then we've had the... you guys had to bring people into it. And I know from looking at fan reaction to it, people were like, okay, all right, that happened, and now this is happening. All right. And then it gradually built to something that match I knew would be good because I trust both of you. But that match was...
it exceeded our expectations and exceeded the fans' expectations and made something genuinely special, because people got the genuine... People were looking at it going, these two hate each other. This is it's a proper feud.
I genuinely hate Sebastian.
It's difficult to get proper feuds in indie wrestling when so many people are preoccupied with putting together a dream match of, we've got this person coming over and this person is already here who's great, so we'll put them together and yeah, everyone will watch it, but there's no drama there. Whereas what you guys provided, both of you relatively inexperienced, still doing that in front of 700 people and doing a gimmick match and having it mean something, is... I'm so proud of both of you for that match, because I thought it was genuinely great. I think one of my favourite things to do is when people tweet me and go, oh, why is Sebastian on shows? I hate him. I'm like, that's why. You hate him. That's the point. He's a heel. You're meant to hate him. You were a heel to start with as well, weren't you?
This is what I was saying about like the being a face and getting over as a face.
Because when you were in... you in that the three-way natural progression series match.
That's right, me, Mambo, and Ali Armstrong.
And Ali, which Ali won, didn't it?
Ali won over, yeah. What does that mean?
And that was that chapter 12, wasn't it?
14,
right. So
fun, the bastard.
So, and it was amazing seeing, that was, all, we were on something special with all three of you, and it's a shame that Ali's had to retire, really, because he was great.
He's a good man.
But what was amazing was seeing how the fans reacted to... Because I did my thing on my phone and went, these guys are from the Projo. So, you know, show a bit of love. And you guys came out and they were... People lost their minds over the three of you. And the match was really good.
It was well put together, yeah. I do say so myself.
It was really good. And that was a point where, for all three of you, we were like, we might be onto something special here. But you were still trying to act sort of the heel in that match. And it was like... You couldn't still make, but the reaction you got there was people were like, I want to cheer the dude who looks like Jesus, this is fun.
It's a bit bad for Ali. Ali will know the 1-2 boo situation, but better man lost. I mean,
forgive me for not being massively familiar with your work outside of Progress, because I never get much chance to watch much of the Progress. But does it tend to carry forward that you're a babyface of Progress, and then if you're working for other companies, you're still a babyface there? Are you a mixture still?
Certain companies, they'll be aware of me. I mean, the fans will be aware of me from Progress, my Progress work, so they tend to cheer me. I do stuff up leads for Rise, and I'm a villain, and I love it so much because it's just I have fun. I say villain, and just considering what we've been talking about, East End. They tend to cheer me, but like. The Flash, when I first started with Flash, I was obviously so brand new, green, inexperienced, etc. Like, I didn't know how to get heat or be a villain. I just went out there trying to, because in my head, I'm just thinking church, you know, etc. You're thinking you're going to get a negative response, you know what I mean? It's considering no one wants views forced down there.
Also, we're a very secular society. The majority of people, not majority of people are atheists, but majority of people are not as religious as they were 50 years ago, certainly.
To an extent. And again, I don't offend people with my character. I don't intend to. That's not my intention. But yeah, like I went out there and I got cheered. I don't know. Maybe people think beard and long hair and Jesus is cool. Who knows? Like these things could all play a part. And
see, I find there's elements to your personality that I find fascinating. Just from getting to know you outside of the ring, and one of them is. The fact that you are, I mean, I think probably 8 times out of 10 times I see you, you're wearing a t-shirt with Morrissey on it.
Well, I'm wearing one
like
now.
You are today.
I hope we get one of those pictures for this podcast thing.
It's a beautiful t-shirt.
It's a lovely t-shirt. Baldy Stanley got me this for me in Denver, I think it was.
I'm 10 years older than you, right? Now, I'm slightly too young to have been a fan of the Smiths the first time round.
I was going to say a fan of Smack, but that's enough. Who cares?
So I'm slightly too young to have been a fan of the Smiths the first time round, but discovered them when I was at university and got into music and whatever. So, and again, the traditional stereotype of a lad who is from North London originally, right?
Actually East, Homerton I was born. Homerton.
So the lad is from East London. And a lad who's been to prison and stuff, not necessarily associated with one of the most sensitive songwriters of all time, Morrissey. So when did you look? Because I mean, one of my favourite bits of merch ever is the "Pastor is Dead" T-shirt that you do, which is fucking unbelievable. And the "Blessed in the World" one.
I've got to show you.
Our friend Rob Rogowski designed the "Blessed in the World" one, which is great.
And he had a hand in doing the "Believe" one, a picture that Muscle White took for us actually at the ballroom, because it was just a thought in my head, a flicker. I don't know, because I think the "Queen is Dead" was like 30 years old, the Smiths album, and it was a coincidence that I got the shirt done and then that happened. But for some reason I thought, yeah, the pastor is dead, because there it was like, I think we were slowly edging away from the pastor and stuff, yeah. Story. And great t-shirt. I was going to say, a pal of mine, Tommy Jacobs, who I actually met whilst I'm away, he has another story, his own story. He's actually a boxer, he's getting into it, he's having his own thing. He bought a picture on my wall yesterday, I'll show it to you,
yeah.
Where he's got my t-shirt. You seen Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill?
Yeah.
I'm painting a picture here. Anyway, he's got his top on, he's got my Believe shirt on, and he's doing a Buffalo Bill impression. But that's another story, alright?
So yeah, when did you, because I can't imagine you weren't into the Smiths when you were like 17, 18, right?
No, I wasn't actually. I was always kind of like, I don't know, like my musical tastes go all around the houses. I tend to go towards sort of like a bit of new metal, rock, whatever, do you know what I mean? Country and Western, all sorts. But I'd heard little bits of Morrissey and the Smiths. Like, look, you hear like a song on the radio on Absolute or whatever. Mm. And I remember one of the first songs I heard of his was the Smiths. What difference does it make?
Yeah.
It's funny because all men have secrets and hear his mind, so let it be known. There's a lyric in it. I don't know why I just said that, but I did. But yeah, I remember hearing that. I thought, that's an incredible song. And even when I was away, there was on Channel 4, they used to show songs at night, and it was "I'm Throwing My Arms Around Paris," Morrissey again. And it was a great song, and I really loved it. And I was drawn to it, but I'd never really done much research or didn't really have the chance. And it was in prison that I was on a course. Alcohol-related violence was the course, and I got talking. Don't know how I got talking to someone on that course about the Smiths, and I said, "What difference does it make?" And the mate said, I forget his name. He's like, "Oh, I've got a few of their albums. Do you want a loan of them?"
Oh, nice.
And he borrowed us the "Louder Than Bombs" and "Strange Ways Here We Come." Ironically,
which is fairly ironic.
Chelmsford, Here I Am. And anyway, I listened to it, and I loved it. I loved everything about the music, the words, you know, everything resonated with me to a degree, because Morrissey talks about pretty much everything in his songs, and a lot of people get the impression that he's miserable, like, from the way
he's... The songs are hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. He's an incredibly witty individual, and I'd love to meet him.
I have to ask you, have you read his autobiography?
I've got his autobiography. I get autobiographies, I get books, I read them, and I just kind of tend to wait. I've seen that Morrissey and Marr, The Severed Alliance there. Never read it, but it's a good book.
Bizarrely, William Regal tweeted the other day about Johnny Marr's autobiography, which apparently is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm going to get this week, I think. But Morrissey's autobiography, unfortunately, I was so excited about it.
Got oh,
it,
yeah,
it
came yeah.
And it is.
Oh, my
in
God.
In places, utter dribble.
Yeah, yeah. He's so dramatic with his writing. Like, come on, mate. Like, I understand.
It's like, all we wanted to know, we wanted to read it and go, come on, just tell us the truth about your life, come on, because you're so secretive. It's weird for me, because I remember, I think, it's quite a sensitive teenager, I remember listening to the Smiths and going, oh, it speaks directly to me. And what's really weird is, I've only been seeing Morrissey once, and it was around the time of his album, which had... First of the Gang to Die and stuff like that.
We Are the Quarry.
That's the one, We Are the Quarry.
Yeah. And great album.
And I went to see him, and what struck me was, there was a lot of blokes there who were maybe 10 years older than me. Like, proper hard geezers.
Yeah.
Crying their eyes out.
It's
such a weird experience. You're like, because you've been seeing
him. I've seen him 3 times, yeah.
And it's such a, you're like, these are proper heterosexual white geezers.
Yeah.
And they're watching him, like, in tears. And it's like, I don't... That response to his music is so cool.
You can't...
I drove past the Salford Boys Club, you know, where the one of the musicians...
Yeah.
And I was like... I remember Facebook driving past it and thinking, I next time I drive past it, I'm going to stop, take a picture and send it to Pastor.
I'll tell you a quick one. The first time I got booked for Manchester Progress, right? It was great. I was like, yeah... Manchester. But I was like, yes, I'm going to Salford's Lads Club and get a picture. So it was the big tag match and everything, done the tag match. And like my main thing was, how do I get to Salford Lads Club? How do I get... Done the match, it was interval, I fucked off, went out looking how to get it. I had to get a bus to bloody wherever it was, down here, Bosch ran houses. Got there, it was pitch black, all you've got is a little corner shop, there's hardly anyone about. It's right rough round there, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? So you'll be wondering when you get caught over night time round there. I went into this shop when I said, your one's probably had it thousands of times. I said, I hate to do this. I said, would you be able to get a picture of me outside Salford Lads Club? He's like, I can't leave the shop. Fair play, alright. Went out and I got a ropey selfie, which I'll never use, but the fact that I'd made the pilgrimage, as it were, to it.
I did not realise this, and this is blowing
my mind.
It was
a bigger pop. I had to walk all the way back. I just about made it in time for the main event, which might have been... I think it were Marty and Hero.
She's that a,
I caught. Yeah.
Not a bad match.
Yeah, I didn't miss that.
So, let's fast forward. So, we're coming out, you got, you know, back into wrestling, and you certainly picked things up quickly, and we noticed you were certainly getting a following, and you were... The fans were paying attention, and the fans cared about you, which is, you know, the important thing. Whether people love you or hate you, you want people to care whether you win or lose.
Absolutely, and
when you won the National Progression Series, everyone sort of went, "Oh, that's good." And obviously, part of winning the National Progression Series is you get a title shot at any time that you so choose. And so you won that, and you cashed in your title shot against Marty Skirl. Including one of my... So putting that match together, putting the first match together, which was Marty Skirl and Tommy End. Marty beats Tommy by usual nefarious villain. Yep. Marty Skirl means, because he's very good at that.
Absolutely.
And then there's a wonderful moment where... And this was me thinking about it as someone who would love to make films, but does not have the talent to do so. There's a wonderful moment of you stood on the stage. You, a man who resembles Jesus a little bit, stood on the stage next to Tommy End, a man who is essentially Satan, and him sort of looking at you as if to go, "I give you full permission to do this." And I know you've got a lot of time for Tommy, because one of the first things that really helped you make an impression on Progress fans was yourself and Mambo, Sweet Jesus, wrestling the Sumerian Death Squad.
SDS, yeah.
And again, people have brought that match up and gone to me this past week with us celebrating our 5th anniversary, and they've brought it up and gone, it was a great match, wasn't it? And I was like, yeah, it was. I've forgotten how good a match it was.
I had come straight from a night shift. I remember I finished, I think, about 9 o'clock, got straight to the ballroom. I was running on bloody empty, running on fumes, coffee and everything else, and we're going over the match. Tommy's going over the match, da, 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 and I was just glazed over. He was like, "Yeah, thing, alright, you're alright." I was obviously it's a one thing being on the stage at Camden for you guys at Progress, but it's another working with like Tommy and Dante. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it was we done well. We done alright, me and Mab. We held our own, you know, considering two very big players in the business. It's Michael Dante and Tommy End.
Yeah, and it's... We'll get to the actual title win in a sec. Who are the people? I mean, obviously you mentioned Jimmy Howard because he's massively involved in your training. Who are the other people sort of around British wrestling? Even if they're guys who've come over, who are the people who've really sort of helped you along your career and given you really good advice and given you the matches that have helped sort of form you into what you are now?
I tend to take bits and pieces away from loads of places. I was training at Progress and I was training at Lucha Britannia. I was going between the two. And actually, my lariat actually come from a training session at Lucha. Me and Tom Dawkins, we were doing a sequence called the Barbra Streisand. if you know the best. And basically involves a back elbow and a switch and a whip. And Tom Dawkins has gone for this back elbow and I haven't ducked in time and I've fucking caught all of that bad boy right on the schnoz. And he's claret everywhere. Fortunately, I didn't break my nose or anything like that, but took a second, dusted myself, I wiped myself, we've done the sequence again. And what it was I'd done it with Flash, this line, and basically done the switch, gone under, shot him off, and then as I've come to throw the back elbow, I've changed it and just fucking I gave Dawkins all of it, and everyone popped for it at the thing, at the training. And I remember big Chris George, who was at the very first pro gel session, which I wasn't. But he was like, "I've never popped for a clothesline before. That was incredible." And I thought, "Fuck me, yeah, I must take this forward." And so yeah, bits and pieces. So Greg Burridge and Gary Van Holm had a bit of a little bits and pieces I've taken from there, like little seminars, clinics that I've been to. Like I went up to Brookside in Leicester, and just the little intricacies of things. Dave Taylor, Drake Works, Drake. I never get his name. Drake Younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Volta. You know, like little bits and pieces. Loads of people. Darrow Allen, who was took over from Jimmy, like a lot from him because he's an incredible trainer. As is James Davis as well, JD.
Mm, absolutely, both good.
Yeah, really, really great guys. Loads of people. Even the guys. Obviously, I'm very fortunate to have worked with. I mean, the caliber of guys I started working with for Progress, like helped me significantly. I mean, Noam Dar, Jack Gallagher, Tyler Bate, the list is endless. Whippy at bloody Download, Night Fire, do you know what I mean? Like, all these things, you take little bits and pieces away, you know, you get the advices, as it were. And
I always love seeing how senior wrestlers are with newer guys. And again, it's the sort of thing that always makes me feel really proud when I see senior wrestlers really taking the time to give feedback and be. Great example of this in our locker room at the minute. Even though he's a senior guy because he's been wrestling for 7 years, but he's 23, is Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne will sit anyone down and go, and he's got a brain for it. Like I completely. If I had an idea, I'd go to Pete and go, "What do you think of this?" Because he gets exactly how to do it, and it's nothing to do with his WWE contract or anything like that. It's all to do with him. Just he loves wrestling and he gets it and he gets all the physicality. And at the minute, he clearly loves doing the indie wrestling as well as obviously doing the WWE stuff. But he gets all that. But at the same time, he gets the storytelling aspect of it. He gets everything. And
watching him, 23. Excuse me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
He's getting old, isn't he?
It's even more. I was talking to Tyler Bate yesterday. Realised that when Tyler's not had a shave, he looks older than me, and yet he's 18 years younger.
Oh my dear! Is he just turned 20? Is Tyler? 20. Isn't he? I love his look at the minute. Very Ronnie Cray. I bloody love it. You know, oh.
Well, they were selling a picture. The British Strong Style was selling a picture yesterday. And I love... I know, storyline-wise, they're villains. Reality-wise, they're fantastic lads, right? And there's a picture of the three of them that I think Ollie Sandler took. And he takes great pictures.
That ringside perspective, right? Yes.
And he took a picture of them all dressed smartly, holding their title belts. So... Trent's got his ICW belt, Pete's got a Progress belt, and Tyler's got the WWE UK belt. And he's wearing glasses.
Oh, he
looks a little bit like Russell Crowe in a couple of shots of him recently as well. It's like, and because they've started dressing smarter and the whole sort of thing, it's like, you're good at this, guys. Yeah. Well done.
It's the business.
So you won the title, So we did a thing on Progress's Twitter this week, which is Progress's 5. You can look at it, hashtag Progress's 5. And what we did was we said, what's everyone's favourite moment in 5 years of Progress? And there were certain things that came up a lot. If I was to pick a few things that came up the most, would be Will Ospreay winning the title against Jimmy Havoc. Jimmy Havoc winning the title in the first place. Some of the surprises we've done, like Roderick Strong and Adam Cole just wandering out of the show runs. The one thing that came up a lot, like dozens and dozens of times, was when you won the title. Because it was like an amazing moment of joy that people probably didn't expect to happen. They probably thought we'd put you in a title match and then that'd be that. But what we actually did was we put the title on you. Now, we didn't put the title on you for long, which I know you always knew. But and for me, like, there's not much... I get emotionally invested in wrestling. I will tell you right now, there's been... Outside of the stuff I've said when I'm doing my speeches about how much it means to me to be a wrestling promoter, there's certain things in the ring that have nearly made me cry, right? And I don't cry much, right? One was,
you should cry more, Jim.
the reaction the crowd gave to the first women's match we put on a chapter show, which was Pollyanna against Ginny.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that the crowd were respectful and awesome, and the fact that both ladies worked incredibly hard and had a brilliant match. That really got me.
Really good match.
And the other time it got me was you winning the title. And part of it was the relief of, I suggested the idea, the relief that it works. And people have just gone, for fuck's sake! Right? Like, the part of it is, but the main part of it was, by this point, I knew about your past. And to know that you've been on that journey, worked really hard, and now, even though at the time we knew it wasn't going to be for long, you have the title.
That's the length is relevant, yeah.
Yeah, people lost their mind over it. You know, just when I remember us putting, James Musselwhite took a lovely picture of you at the title bar, and I was put the picture of the next day on the Facebook page, and people were like, this is fucking tremendous, because they did not see this coming. It was a nuts moment.
I think it was Rob Brazer.
Was it Rob?
I apologize. They're both awesome workers, yeah. Both awesome. But like, this is the thing, going back to like being nervous and stuff. Honest to God, like I'm behind the curtain. I know my spot when I need to come out, and I've honestly, like, I'm getting better in terms of nervous before a match and stuff like that. But I nearly collapsed waiting because the nerves. Because like you said,
you got to stay there for a whole match as well.
It was a fucking fantastic match. That wasn't the concern. It was just like you're saying, how are the fans going to react to this? Yeah. Like, you don't know. There's like, you can never be, that's a bit of advice, you can never go out there expecting people to like you. The prime example, Eva, me and Flash, thing, I'm meant to go out as the villain, I got a bit of a cheer, which made Flash's job harder, who was meant to be the villain, being introduced, etc.
Yeah.
But I'm there and I'm so nervous, trying to get a pump on, a few press ups, whatnot, and like, legs are going, fucking the butterflies, all the rest of it. And Tommy's on the stage, the music hits, boom, pop, fuck. Like, and even that, like, another thing I'm trying to learn is just listening to the crowd, because you get lost, you know what I mean? Like, I get lost, more to the point. But yeah, boom, come out, the business, fucking looking at Tommy gives me the fucking, the nod, Bosch, go, the see you, say it to your time, cash in, Bosch, don't kill Marty with the lariat, you know what I mean? All these things are in your head, you know? Wait for the bell and all this, that, and the other, and then obviously the three, and honestly, like, 700 people, like, they all lost it in unison, enjoying it, you know what I mean, enjoying the moment, like, and, oh God, like, because obviously, like, it is a big deal. I knew the crack, I knew it was coming, but still, do you know what I mean, it's still, like, there, like, Roberts, I'm on my knees giving it, Roberts, I'm like, get on your feet, Pastor, on your feet, but I'm overwhelmed, I'm surprised I've made it to the fucking ring without collapsing, it was a sheer fucking fright, but... Yeah, man, like...
Riley cried his eyes out.
Oh, do you know what I mean? I'm John. Oh, John Evangelicus.
John. He was like, there's my Evangelicus. Because there's brilliant shots of you being crowd.
Oh, man, like, that was it. Like, I wanted to run and dive into the crowd, but, like, I don't want to kill anyone, do you know what I mean? Not in my form, but...
How did you feel when we told you we were going to do it? Because...
I remember, yeah, because it was, like, Glenn's, who'd done the face-to-face and stuff, and the belt was there, like... It's surreal. It's like, things like that, I can't... It's very difficult. I'm trying to think of something similar. It's just... You can't believe it. It's like working Download and Sonosphere and all that and the other. Like, these are... And fucking Brixton even. It's so overwhelming. It's just... It's hard to take in at times. You know what I mean? It's an amazing opportunity. Look at the calibre of guys and stuff.
I still get it like that now. I get it with both comedy and wrestling. It's like... Yesterday being our fifth anniversary show, I spent most of the day just going... How have we been doing this for 5 years? Just three idiots. How have we been doing this? How have we made this a success? When, you know, we're moderately successful in our other forms of work, but we've made this, like, really good, and I don't know how we've
done it. It's mad, isn't it?
And also, as well, because, I said this to John the other day, because in the world of comedy, like, the carny world of wrestling, you're allowed to say, this is the best thing that's ever been done, ever, right? And you're allowed to sell stuff like that. In comedy, you're not. you can't like flyer someone to come and see your show in Edinburgh by going, please come and see it. This is the greatest show you'll ever see. Because then they'll come and go, no, he
isn't.
But that level of hyperbole is totally acceptable in wrestling. You can't go, you should buy a ticket for this. It's going to be the greatest show of all time. And normally, we're looking, we can normally back up that most shows tend to be at least very good. We've not had an awful one yet. There's still time.
It's a lot still, absolutely.
A lot of shows left this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's always going to be one of my favourite moments in the history of our company, because just the joy of everybody. And everybody went away from that show just like, anything can happen on a progress show. And it's that thing, if anyone's into football, that thing that you have. So when Leicester won the league last year, the person I was most excited for and played for Leicester was Andy King, who's played for the youth team since he was 16. Because he's one of ours. He's not actually from Leicester, he's from London. But he's one of ours. And he scored in our last home game of the season. And I remember being delighted, not just because I put a 10 on it, but I remember being delighted. And I remember being delighted because it was like, yes, we've won the league. We've won it for him because he's been here for 10 years and he's played in League One and now he's in the league and it's brilliant. And I think we got that with you and with anyone who people know has come through the Projo. It's always that link of, oh, he's one of ours. And it's the same with the girls. They're ours. And we've helped shape them. And now this has happened and this is going to help. And it's just, it will never stop being one of my favourite moments. I remember it really got to me just how excited and happy people were. You didn't see a single person going, no. Even people who are Marty fans, you saw people in these chicken wing t-shirts going, yeah, this is pretty fucking cool though, guys, come on.
Pop me like He's a fan of progress. Daniel Ellis, I see him like, and he's very reserved in his ways and very opinionated, but we all are. And even he was giving it on the relay, like, cheers, brother, you know what I mean? Like, at the time, everyone was like really enjoying themselves, getting into it. Like, I was probably, obviously, being the man with the belt, I was the one who was, I was loving it, I was lapping it, I was mental. I think we must have played the Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus. Depeche Mode, get in contact, I want to use your song, please. But I love yous. But yeah, like, it must play about three times.
Do you remember the last words I said to you in the ring?
The last words you said in the ring?
So I gave you a hug in the ring.
Yeah.
But the reason fuck up, mate, we really want to stop the show now. You've been celebrating for the last 27 minutes.
I was like, yeah, the Natural Progression win as well. I was talking all sorts of things, putting Stephen Nelly over and everything else, and he's taking the mic off, and I was like, shit, let me put Moser over. Moser! Cheers, brother! But yeah, like, oh my god, yeah, just being able to, I couldn't truly like appreciate the madness that was going on around me, because the madness in my head was overbearing itself. And getting old Penny into the ring to put the belt on, she done a fantastic job with that and all. Cheers, Penny.
I think it was just it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about your past and be open about it, is because I genuinely think when people come and see you at the merch stand or whatever, you have got a character, but you are a people person. You're good to talk to and you're a nice guy. And I think knowing that someone that everyone looks up to, you know, in wrestling, and respects the fact that you've done very well very quickly, everyone looks up to, and everyone knows he's a good dude. And knowing
who are we talking about? I'm confused, man. What's going on here?
But for people to know that you've overcome to get to where you've got to, the story in itself, if the story was just man trains a couple of years later as progress champion, that'd be fine. But the fact that the story is all this adversity, comes out super focused to get trained within 6 months of being out is wrestling. Within a couple of years of that, is progress champion. And you know,
that in itself is like, I can't, you know, it's mad. It's, I can't, you know.
And it's proof.
I never would have expected it. You know, I mean, how can you expect it to be?
For all the because obviously, and you'll be aware of this because I know you're doing stuff with Wrapped and stuff like that. There's always. The statistic that people always bandy about is the stereotype, even, is that someone goes to prison, they're going to come out, they're going to do something again, they're going to go back to prison.
Revolving door, yeah.
That happens with a lot of people.
And I've seen it firsthand, yeah.
Didn't happen with you. You identified your problems when you were in prison, addressed them, came out, and you know, and you're a happy, awesome, functioning member of society. You just fucking get on with it. You work harder, and you want to wrestle, and you do it. Now, you are running the London Marathon, aren't you?
This is true. I don't know what's wrong with me. Why am I doing this?
So I was training to do it last year, and I got injured, which wasn't fun. How's the training going, first of all?
I'm in the taper as James Musselwhite. James Musselwhite, who's a fantastic portrait photographer, portrait of a wrestler. Yep. Just getting you out there. I never knew this. Like we had a meal a couple of months ago, January, whatever it was, and I was like, I want to run the London Marathon, James. Like, and he was like, you do know I run a running club, don't you? Mm. I was like, what? I've known James for about two and a half years or whatever it is, and I never knew that. How ignorant am I? But he's ran 9 bloody marathons as well, like, and
yeah, it seems like every other weekend he's run like a 10K.
Yeah, this is the thing, like, and so I was like, yeah, really. He's like, you sure you really want to do this? I was like, yeah. He goes, I'll let you know. I'll give you training advice and stuff like that. And he's been giving us distances to run, little cheat cardio gimmicks and stuff like that. And I've been sticking them to him as much as I can, trying to get at least 3 runs a week out. But
because at the minute you're working nights and wrestling as well, right?
Oh my god, yeah. I'm trying to get hench, you know what I mean? Trying to do all these things. It's very difficult trying to stay relatively sane as well in between, get adequate sleep.
And have a life as well. You know what I mean?
What is one of these? Yeah, life. I don't know what it is. Wrestling is life, isn't it? Is that another podcast? I don't know. Like, who cares? But yeah, no, training, like, at the minute, it's a taper. I only had one run last week. Sorry, James. Sorry, Raps. Sorry, Martin. You know, whoever he is. And but yeah, just taper is just, like, little easy runs. I didn't know what taper was. So I'm going to try and educate the fans and all other people.
I only found out when I was reading up on it, when I was trying to do my training last year. It's sort of... Because the marathon's soon, isn't it?
It's the 23rd of April,
so
yes.
So 10 days progress.
Progress, yeah.
Probably shouldn't book past the that day.
I was going to do it last year as well, Jim, right? And I'm talking to John, and I was like, John, I want to run the marathon this year. I know it falls on the same day as progress, which happened to be the MPS final. And he was like, well, I kind of want you to put a match on, a relatively good match, 10, 12 minutes or whatever it was. You're not going to be able to do that running a marathon. I was like, you sure? All right, John.
And, I was meant to do it last year, and then I pulled out because of injury. And I kept saying, oh, yeah, it'll be fine. I'll be able to ring announce. And people kept going, you won't, mate. You'll be dead.
I ran the last long run I did last Sunday. The Sunday before last, sorry. I'd done 18 miles. And, yeah, like, it was easier than a previous long run. But, yeah, you're fucked. And there's still another 8 miles of the 26.2 that needs to be done. But
you are doing this for charity. You mentioned you're doing it. So Wrapped, who you mentioned made a huge difference in your life, are who you're doing it to raise money for.
Yes.
Now, presumably, people will be able to donate money to this. Have you got like a Just Giving page and stuff like that?
I have a Just Giving page. It is justgiving.co.uk/run. Pastor Run, not Pastor, as I'd usually say. PASTOR, not PASTA.
Yeah.
Just so you know. please, if you can, just spare a few quid. It's well appreciated. My target's 2 grand. I think I've got about 700. Every little helps. You know, if I don't hit 2K at the end of the day, as long as I hit 26.2 miles, it doesn't matter. As long as I raise awareness and a few quid for Wrapped.
700 quid's good going. And I mean, if you're not too exhausted to drag yourself to progress on the 23rd,
oh,
I'm sure if you bring a bucket with you, we'll probably chuck some coins.
Absolutely, do you know what I mean? Like, if you allow me, I'd be more than happy to come into the ring. You know what I mean? put a match on.
It's
give it a go.
But it's a good, you know, and hearing you speak. So we were on a chat when you were at the Motorstone last show. Hearing you chat so positively about it and wanting to do something and help make a difference is a good thing, because again, Rap made a difference to you, made
absolutely.
You wake up to the person you could be, and you know, I think it's a great thing for people to support, and sometimes people look at charities like that and go, oh, well, it's out of my frame of reference because it's something to do with people who are in prison. It doesn't, but I think hearing your story is the sort of thing that people go, do you know what, like a couple of quid here and there really does help make a difference to people, and it can change society for the better, because like you say, you came out of prison and be, because you'd met Raptor and Raptor made a difference to you in prison, uh-huh. you came out and everything had changed for the better.
Absolutely. Like, the biggest thing that helped me, like, make the firm decision, that it says it on my Just Giving page in the description and stuff, I attended the Rap Reunion 2012, it was, because they hold, like, a big convention, if you will, a reunion of all the graduates and stuff, people who are in the community, and also a couple who are inside, they'll come and bring them to King's Cross, or whatever. It's a really nice venue, and everyone gets up, and they have their shares, and, you know, stories of how people have overcome their addiction and stuff like that, and really, like, I'd been to meetings and stuff, but I went to this reunion, and I sat there, and, like, a lot of people were going there for the wrong reasons, but that's neither here nor there. When I say that is, they were looking, a few guys were going just to get out for the day or whatever.
Yeah.
I went there, and I sat, and honestly, the feeling I felt was so overwhelming. It was amazing, like, just, I can't, it's almost like a higher state of consciousness, if you will, like, just, you're in a room of like-minded individuals. The best way to describe it would be at a progress show, for example, where everyone is there together to enjoy themselves. We're all here for the same purpose, to see wrestling. But yeah, went there, listened to the stories and of how people have overcome, and stories that you can relate to, you know, that I could relate to, more to the point. And I just realised that people, they do the countdown, how many days if you've been clean, da-da-da-da-da. And it just like, it just clicked, boom, abstinence is for me. Like, that was, Rap Reunion 212, that was the one that made it really fucking make sense for me. All fell into place. And again, I have Martin Johnson, who's the guy who suggested I'd attend a meeting, which eventually led to me going to the Rap Reunion. I'm not a rap graduate, I haven't done the 12 steps and etc. like that. Wouldn't mind, I'll have a go at it, maybe, you know what I mean, get a sponsor, etc. If it works for you, I'm doing well, I know I'm doing okay. If I feel like I'm on the rocks, I know where I need to go, I know where to go, I'm in contact with Rapt. Anyway, yeah, Rap Union was the one for me. And yeah, Rapt, they've got some cracking patrons as well. You got Russell Brand, boo, yay, who cares? he's a patron. I found Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins is another patron.
Awesome.
Tony Adams, a lot of members of Parliament who have their own demons and stuff with alcohol and whatnot, etc.
And this is quite
interesting. You know what I mean?
I reckon everybody knows someone who's had a problem with addiction.
Of course, yes.
And it's you know, for some people, the person they know who's got a problem with addiction is a mate of theirs, a family member who is a person who just has a drink every day, and they don't, no arms calls, but they just have a drink every day. They're killing their liver or whatever, right? But they're still in addiction. You know, they don't necessarily think that. And again, I'm weird for someone who's straight edging. I'm not anti-booze. I entertain drunk people for a living. I'm anti-booze and me. Abstinence is 100% for me. My missus isn't straight edge. You know, it's just something that appeals to me because I wouldn't necessarily have done any, I don't know what I would have done if I'd have carried on drinking, but it always felt that the problems were only a little bit away. And it, you know, anyone could find themselves in the situation that you, and it's like you say, you, not non-drinking you, placid, lovely dude, right? It's like you were saying before, you used to drink a bit too much, get in fights, and that led to all of your problems, you know. And it's addressing that underlying addiction, which at the time you would have just thought, I just like a drink, you know. And the difference that, once you started telling me about Rap, the difference that they've made in your life, they were the people who helped put you, it's your motivation and your willpower is a huge part of it, but they put you on the path to where you are now. It's,
absolutely.
We should certainly support them.
From what I can say, from my experience, my personal experience is, we all know best, right? We all know best, or at least we think we know best. Now, like I said, I had my problems with alcohol, smoking, whatever. And I always thought I knew best. Like, what I used to say is, oh, I'll set realistic limits, because I had a bit of form. I had to do a alcohol rehabilitation thing for 6 months prior to me going away. And I worked with an alcohol worker and stuff like that, and they were like, do you know, one of them said to me, and this is like, I'm not saying it was his fault, one of them actually said to me, they went, you know, you're still quite young, you could still have a drink. Like, worst advice ever in the fucking world. You know what I mean? Like,
but mate, the amount of times people say to me, "You don't drink," I'm like, "Yeah, no, I stopped drinking like 18 years ago." They're like, "You're not just out one."
No. Yeah, it's incredible. Like, but like I'm saying, like, we all know best, and you know, like, people say to me, "Martin, you've got to sort it out." Do you know what I mean? All right, I set realistic limits, and I'd still fucking slip up, and I did. And you could tell someone who has a problem with addiction to you, blue in the face, you've got to sort yourself out or whatever. That's not the best thing to say. All you can do is suggest things. Don't ever, like, get on someone. Like, I'm saying personally from my experience, because it was me that went to that reunion, went to the meetings, and then listened and thought, wow, do you know what? Maybe I'm not alone in this. Maybe abstinence is for me. It can work. It does work. Do you know what I mean? So, like, if there are people out there with addiction and stuff, all you can do, like, I know it's hard and stuff like that, all you can merely do is suggest, you know, if the individual has a problem, I can see it themselves, that you want that ultimately, but yeah, just try and suggest. Don't ever try and, like, say, this is what you need to do, da da da, because it won't work, and I know it firsthand. I don't know why I was looking straight at the recorder saying, like, I'm talking to you.
But I do it, so, because I'm very upfront about my
business,
because it's always been something I've talked about on stage, because I'm quite, weirdly, I'm comfortable talking about all my problems on stage, not so much off stage. And I started saying to people, I'm writing a show about being straight edge at the minute, and I started saying to people, hey look, have you ever got any problems with this? If I'm not busy, just tweet me and I'll talk to you. And I've had a couple of people since I did that show in February, a couple of people saying, I'm trying not to drink, but I find it a bit difficult. You got any tips? And I'm like, I tell you what worked for me, but like
that's just what works for you, isn't it? Yeah.
But the fact that you're even talking to me in the first place says that you want to face up to it, and that's the first thing. What surprised me is how many Progress fans don't drink. I know a lot of them do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drunk people there. There's a lot of people who are straight edge or teetotal or whatever. Which I find sort of quite nice, because out of the three of us that run the company, I'm the only straight edge one. You know, John and Glenn both drink, and you know, it's. I mean, John's not much of a pie animal. Glenn's
a pisshead.
Glenn's a better drunk. But yeah, it's just it's one of those that I'm finding just by me talking about it, and you'll probably find the same. But you talking about it, people, you might occasionally have someone just say, I'm drinking too much. What's the tips? And again, we can't give anyone. Your path is not the definite path for everybody.
I wouldn't suggest my path to absolutely nobody.
But the, you know, your sort of your awareness of your past and the way you've owned up to it and the way that you've, you know, whatever you've spoke to me about you going to prison, everything you've always said is, I know I did wrong. I'm sorry for what I did. I've done my time. I just want to get my head down and get on with stuff. And I think now, if people go back and watch the moment when you won the title with this knowledge in their head, it was already a great moment. I think it makes it genuinely one of the best moments in British wrestling for me ever, because once they know the stuff that we knew in the background that has propelled you to be that good that quickly, I think it's a genuinely inspiring story, and that's why I wanted to talk about it today. And also time it so people can sponsor you for doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Please do. And like I was saying, I agree with what you're saying. Like, I've had people say to me, oh, how do you do it? Like, well, never say out front, I have a problem. Or no one's ever going to say I've got a problem. But it's like, oh, I wish that. Another one is, I wish I could do what you're doing, or I wish I couldn't drink or whatever. And you can. You're like, ask yourself, why do you drink? And a lot of the time, people just say, oh, I like to drink. It's sociable, but you can have a bloody great time being sober. And I'm on the same fence as you as well. Like, I don't mind if people want to get, you know, have a good time, get drunk or whatever. I can hang around people. I can actually get. I get a buzz off being around people who are drunk. I start feeling drunk myself.
I do get people saying to me, oh, are you all right? Is drinking? Yeah, I'm totally fine.
there's a saying that's in the rooms. It's, if you hang around the barbershop too long, you get your hair cut. Well, my hair's hanging down to my arse. And I ain't cutting it anytime soon, brother. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm loving it, you know?
That is the distraction piece's Twitter feed. That's probably that's probably the bit you use for the little gift that we put. That quote there. That's
Martin Kelly, 2007. Excuse me, William Ivar, 2007.
Where are you on the internet? So we can plug where you are.
My Twitter handle, my Instagram handle, my Facebook is all at verbillevar, B-I-L-L-E-A-V-E-R.
I'll put a link to, in the podcast description as well, I'll put a link to Pastor's sponsorship page on Just Giving, which is justgiving.co.uk, run Pastor run.
/ of course. At verified Twitter, or Twitter verified, blue tick won't go and miss. You know, I need validation. I crave it instantly.
But I think there's a problem with you on Twitter. You only follow one Twitter account, though.
I do. Yeah,
which is...
I'm Geese. No.
Oh, oh, oh. Isn't it? Do you just follow Jesus Christ?
I follow Jesus at Jesus. I follow, and I think even that's a bit of a tongue in cheek.
I don't think it's the real dude.
What? How dare you, Jim? Don't do that.
I'm sorry, mate. Right, we're going to wrap this up. Genuinely, thank you for telling your story, because it's something I want to do for a long time, and I hope people listening take a lot of inspiration out of it, because I genuinely think it's inspiring, and I admire you, mate. So thank you very much.
I'm no longer nervous, by the way.
That's good to know. Cheers, mate.
So that was the tale of Pastor William Ivar as he met me on Tuesday Night Jaw. I'm so grateful for Pastor for talking to me about it. I mean, he mentioned some bloke called Martin, but we're not entirely sure who he is. I'm so grateful for him telling this story. It's difficult for him to talk about, but it's something that he has to face up to every day. And he wanted to talk about it publicly and put it out there, because he's trying to do really good things, especially with working through Wrapped and doing the London Marathon. He's trying to do really, really good things and talk about the rehabilitation of prisoners. And he's a great example of this. You know, a man who had drink problems before he went to prison, addressed those in prison, addressed his addiction issues, came out. And I'll be honest with you, anyone who's ever been to a Progress show and ever had a conversation with Pastor, like, when I found out about his past, I was shocked, because he's one of the nicest human beings I've ever met. He's a proper, unless you arrested him, he's a proper gentle giant. And it's a story that I've wanted to tell for quite some time, because I genuinely think he's inspiring. I mentioned this before, I've got a family history of my family working in prisons, and so many people who just see the revolving door of people coming back in all the time. Pastor's a great example of someone who had something he wanted to dedicate himself to, and now he's out of prison, he's happily in a relationship, he's got a good job, because he has got a good job, and he complains about it, but he's got a good job. And he's also a great wrestler. He's a wrestler who won our title at Progress, because we saw great potential in him. And he's still just getting started. There's still loads of opportunities for him. I know some opportunities won't be afforded to him straight away because of certain issues with travel and stuff like that, but it doesn't mean he's killing it here, because he's dedicated to it and he wants to be good. So, you know, I think his story is genuinely inspiring. He knows he did wrong, you know, insulted someone, and he's sorry, and he served his time, and I know it bothers him every single day, but the dedication he's had to trying to turn his life around is genuinely admirable. And I'm so grateful that he told his story with us this week on Tuesday Night Jaw. So once again, thank you very much, Pastor William Ivar. Don't forget to sponsor him, justgiving.co.uk/runpastorrun. Sponsor him. Give him some money, even if it's only a couple of quid. Give him some money, because you can hear the difference that Wrapped made to his life. So sponsor him. justgiving.co.uk/runpastorrun. I'll be grateful if you do that, okay? I'd really appreciate it. Obviously, the all usual things with the podcast. If you liked it today, you found it interesting, you wanted to talk about it, then talk to me about it. @JimSmallman on Twitter, #TuesdayNightJaw. Most of today on Tuesday, I am going to be spending with my wife and my son before I vanish. I miss my wife's birthday on Saturday, and I'm really sorry, Mr. Smallman. I'm so sorry, but she's pretty cool and pretty forgiving. So we're going to go and do cool stuff today, like stroke pigs. We're really excited. But tweet me. I'll get back to you when I can. @JimSmallman, #TuesdayNightJaw. Especially if you want to discuss this today. And if you like this and you think it's a genuinely inspiring story, then share it about. Tell people about it. Bring more people into this wrestling podcast. This wrestling podcast is different. It's positive. We're not just talking about stuff that a lot of podcasts do, which is, I wouldn't do things like that. I think wrestling is amazing. I said this last week in the when I was talking about the fifth anniversary of Progress. Wrestling has genuinely changed my life. Pastor William Eva, wrestling has genuinely changed his life. You might be listening to this now thinking, do you know what? Wrestling's where I go and see my friends, as well, my friends are. Then wrestling has changed your life. So point people in the direction of this podcast, because we're trying to be positive. So if you want to make people more aware of it, jimsmallman.com/TNJ is the best place to point people, or link them into iTunes or wherever you're getting your podcast from, the Acast app, anything like that. My website is jimsmallman.com. All my gigs are up on there. I'm not gigging for a few days because I'm going to Orlando. But all my gigs are up on there, and you can download one of my shows, and there's all various other things about me. And I've got a blog that I write now. I wrote a blog about aging the other week because apparently at 38 I'm too old to do quite a lot of things in comedy. So have a read of that if you want. It might give you a different perspective on the, my other career. Progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com. Very important that you're aware of my wrestling company's little websites. And also, and obviously you can see lots of Pastor William Eva on there. You can kind of see the genesis, no pun intended, for a man who looks like Jesus, of his career. And obviously, please support everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. A year ago, Scroobius Pip gave me the opportunity to do this podcast. I'm still grateful every single day. The fact that someone I've looked up to for a decade is my mate now and talks about wrestling with me is utterly, utterly bizarre. But he, not just my podcast, there's loads of podcasts on there that are worth your support. And of course, the Distraction Pieces podcast itself. I felt very much through doing this and talking to Pastor that this is the closest I'll get to doing something as amazing as Pip's Distraction Pieces podcast. So it means a lot to me if you go and listen to all those, subscribe to all those, support the network. It will be great of you. Right, I'm off to WrestleMania. If you are coming to any show that I am at during WrestleMania weekend and you see me, be you British or American, I don't care where you're from, anywhere in the world, and you see me, you know how it works. You come up to me and you high-five me. You don't have to. I'm not a wrestler. I'm not the sort of person who's going to go, you have to, you know, I'm going to charge you a couple of dollars to have a photo with me. No, come up to me, high five me, have your photo taken with me. I'm not bothered. I'll do all that shit for free. I don't care. Okay. So if you see me, come and say hi. If not, enjoy WrestleMania. We'll talk about it in a couple of weeks here. Okay. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. It means a lot to me that you listened to this episode today, because I think it's a really important one. Okay. See you soon, guys. Enjoy your week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.